It's Wednesday, November 14th, 2018, and this is KBIA's Views of the News. Our weekly roundtable on media behaviors comes to you from the Futures Lab studio at the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Amy Simons, and here with me this week are my colleagues, Mike McKean and Ernest Perry.
Hello, Amy.
On our program this week, protesters targeted Tucker Carlson's home, marking it with graffiti. How did they get a hold of his home address, and how is Fox News responding to that? Is it real, or is it artificial intelligence creating that image of a television news anchor? We'll talk about an experiment in China that could render, quite literally, some of television news journalists obsolete. And we're going to take a few moments to remember Stan Lee. Hopefully there's a lot more that we'll get to before our half hour is up. But let's start with CNN's lawsuit filed in federal court yesterday after the White House pulled Jim Acosta's press pass following this exchange with President Trump last Wednesday talking about his commercial about the migrant caravan.
They're hundreds of miles away, though. They're hundreds and hundreds of miles away. That's
I
not an invasion.
I think you should let me run the country. You run CNN. All right. And if you did it well, your ratings would be much better.
If I may ask one other question. Mr. President, if I may ask one other question, are you worried?
That's enough. That's enough.
Mr. President, I was going to ask one of the other folks.
That's enough.
Pardon me, ma'am.
That's enough.
Mr. President, I had one other question, if I may ask, on the Russia investigation. Are you concerned that...
I'm not concerned about anything with the Russian investigation because it's a hoax. That's enough. Put down the mic.
Mr. President, are you worried about indictments coming down in this investigation?
Mr. President.
I'll tell you what, CNN should be ashamed of itself having you working for them. You are a rude, terrible person. You shouldn't be working for CNN.
So there is a lot to unpack here, and we're going to get to a bunch of the different angles and the issues at play here. Let's start with the lawsuit. It wasn't unexpected. In fact, it was hinted at by, of all people, Sam Donaldson, unreliable sources on CNN over the weekend.
Right. I mean, first of all, CNN can't stand for their chief White House correspondent to basically be kicked out and not fight back in some way. Also, the law seems to be on their side. I mean, there's a precedent from the 70s involving a White House reporter, and basically the court ruled unless you have very narrowly defined reasons for kicking somebody out, you really can't do that. It violates the First and the Fifth Amendments. So I really just don't know what leg they have to stand on, and the excuses that the White House has given and the president himself has given have shifted so much over time, it's hard to see how that stands up in court. There's a hearing that's going to be happening not long after we tape this.
Yeah,
so I guess
we
won't
do
know
tape.
For
we should,
sure.
We should say we tape this show at about, right now it's about 20 after 1 in the afternoon on Wednesday. So that hearing is scheduled for a couple of hours from now.
Yeah. Well, excuse me. I mean, one of the things we need to be aware of here is that, you know, this is another part of the long-running reality show, which is the Trump candidacy, presidency, you know. And so the ratings were slipping. The ratings were slipping because the election was over. We got to keep the ratings up. So you hold a press conference and you call on people that you know you want to attack. Jim Acosta, several.
Peter Alexander after that.
The woman who is who's the White House correspondent for the NPR.
April Ryan from Urban Radio.
These are people who you know you're going to attack. You attack them the way you always have. And then you let the chips fall where they may, and you take your opportunity and you take your shot. And so it would not surprise me in the least bit if you had the hearing today and somewhere over the Thanksgiving break, Jim Acosta gets his press pass back and we move on to the next thing that can increase the ratings even more. I mean, it's where we are with this presidency.
So, Mike, you had mentioned there was a case from the 70s, a reporter by the last name of Cheryl, and he had sued, actually, it may have even been earlier than that. The case I was thinking about was from the Johnson administration.
Right.
And in his case, the court did rule to give him back his press pass. Mm-hmm. He chose not to renew it at that point.
And basically, the argument was, if I remember it correctly, that basically, unless this correspondent was a physical threat to the president of the United States, then you really couldn't do that.
Right.
And the reasons that the White House has given, I mean, on the day it happened, right, you have Sarah Huckabee Sanders basically saying, oh, he put his hand on the female intern. Yeah, we can't allow that to happen. Right. When it was clear after some investigation that it really didn't happen.
Yeah, that was the video that was sped up.
Right.
Right. So talk about that part of it for a second, Ernest. This idea that there were several news organizations that took the video and examined it frame by frame to determine that it probably had been doctored.
Well, I mean, what happened was that, you know, Sarah Huckabee Smith had received this video from a source, and source turned out to be InfoWars.
Connected with
InfoWars. And so she put that out on Twitter. And then news organizations picked it up, and they began to examine it and realized that it had been manipulated to show that Acosta had touched this woman when, in fact, he did not touch the woman.
Well, and in fact, they slowed down the video and zoomed in on the video so that it looked like the accidental touching was more sinister, the karate chop to her arm or whatever they were calling it, right?
Right.
The White House, though, continuing to stand by it, in fact, doubling down on it. Kellyanne Conway coming back out again in defense of the use of this video. It kind of makes them look foolish.
Although for a while, and when that argument didn't hold up after a lot of scrutiny, then the president himself said, well, he shouldn't have treated her that way, but the real issue was his Acosta's disrespect for me and for the presidency. That was the reason. When that didn't hold, then it came out, Sarah Huckabee Sanders said, was it maybe yesterday or the day before, that it was really that because Acosta was monopolizing the time. He was grandstanding and not allowing other reporters their opportunity to ask questions, which was the height of irony since she has basically stopped holding daily press briefings, for some time now. But the argument keeps shifting as to the justification, which I think leads to where you're suggesting it's going to go. Quietly, over the Thanksgiving holidays, the White House is going to capitulate, and he's going to be back, and he'll be the convenient foil for the White House he's always been.
And absolutely. I mean, and that, to me, that's going to be the key, is that, you know, throughout all of this long-running reality show that we're all living in right now, there are certain individuals who are key role players in the show, and Jim Acosta is one of those people.
And he's allowing himself in a lot of ways to be played into the narrative.
Yeah, I mean, frankly, I'm not sure Acosta is blameless in all of this. I'm still saying that he shouldn't have had his press pass taken, and there are bigger implications of the chilling effect on journalists if that stands. But he's not blameless. I mean, he has a style that he calls attention to himself. He, instead of asking tough questions, he makes statements. You know, Sam Donaldson, you mentioned, who similarly was an aggressive reporter in his day, but he let his questions do the talking, not putting his opinions out there. And I thought Chris Wallace over at Fox News, who was a White House correspondent and a pretty aggressive one in the day, also said it's pretty hard to stand up for solidarity when Acosta is playing the kinds of games he's playing. Still, I mean
you've had Bob Woodward and others who have come out even before this incident and chastised Acosta for the way in which he does his reporting.
He has become a very polarizing figure within the world and within the community of journalists. There are a lot of journalists who are coming out very clearly in support of him and the type of work that he's doing. There have been professional organizations, RTDNA among them. I believe SPJ also may have offered a statement as well in support of him and of CNN in this case. But then you also have the Al Tompkinses and the Kelly McBrides from Pointer. And they have a piece that's on our links blog that say that he really brings out a lot of the worst journalism has to offer, that this isn't the best move for what it is we're trying to do. So I guess I want to ask you at this point, what is a journalist who isn't Peter Alexander, who steps up in support of him in that moment in that press conference to support the line of questioning there? What is the journalist to do? Do you boycott the media availabilities when they have them, or do you go and keep asking the hard questions and carry the mantle for...
I mean, I think journalists are caught in a very difficult spot right now. I had a conversation earlier today with a friend of mine who is high up in a media organization, and he was just pointing out that, you know, it is still the president's, it's still the office of the president, and you're still obligated to cover those stories. I mean, think about it. What if the news media wasn't there to show that President Trump wasn't present at that huge ceremony in Europe?
The one in the rain.
The one in the rain. You know, I mean, you think about, you know, what would happen if the press decided we're not going to cover these? I mean, now all of a sudden you're going to be accused of not. Again, going back to respect, of not respecting the office enough to cover it because of the individual that's in it. I mean, you're caught in a difficult spot, but then when you do cover it, you're being used as a foil to rile up the base in this political partisan drama that continues out. So, I mean, you're caught in a very difficult spot.
I mean, I do think it's almost a no-win situation because the drumbeat is so steady with the president attacking the press. Mm-hmm. I can remember back when President Obama was doing the freeze on Fox News and CNN stood up for Fox News and other journalists and said, you know, if you're going to freeze them out, we're not going to participate in these kinds of events. But if you say it today, it's just playing into the narrative of a president who every single day is attacking the press. And it's not just Jim Acosta. I mean, you mentioned one of three black women who are correspondents last week who were either called racist, stupid, or I forget what the other phrase was, but they were all denigrating them for just asking questions. Not giving opinions, asking questions.
And I have a, to be honest with you, I think that deserves a lot more scrutiny than what's happening with Jim Acosta. I mean, and these women have been constantly attacked since he was a candidate. And they're just asking questions. They're not doing any grandstanding or they're not presenting their questions in the same way as statements in the way in which Jim Acosta is presenting his. They're just asking a question. I mean, especially the woman who asked the question, and he turned around and said, you know, that's a stupid question. And
pointing fingers
at her. And she's like, wait a minute, I just asked a question, you know. And that, I think, is even, like I said, even more egregious than everything else that's going on.
If there's anything that we as journalists can do, I mean, I think Bob Woodward said this, and we've said it many times on this program, stop focusing so much attention on ourselves and do more and better reporting about the impact of Trump administration policies. Don't cover every little tweet of the president.
It's hard to do that, though, when you're those three women who literally get shot or get shouted down for asking that question about that issue, about that story that does matter.
But here, I'm glad you brought up the point about Twitter. When the president sends out a tweet, mm-hmm. okay, it's difficult and almost next to impossible to get a response back on that. So it's hard to provide any kind of context to what he's saying because there is no give and take. There is no conversation there. It's just the president making a statement in a tweet, and then we try to respond as best we can, but it's difficult to do that when you don't actually know what it is he means by what he's putting in that tweet.
Okay, well, at about the same time that Jim Acosta was realizing he wasn't going to get to do his primetime live shots outside the White House last Wednesday night, Tucker Carlson was going on the air at Fox News, and his phone was blowing up with text messages from his wife. There were protesters outside their home shouting that they know where he and where they sleep and vandalizing the property there. What were they so upset over?
Supposedly, this was the group Smash Racism DC, and they were upset with what Tucker Carlson has been saying about the caravan and his portrayal of immigration policy. And that's legitimate, of course, criticism. But to go to his home and say, we know where you sleep at night, and putting an anarchy symbol spray painted on his driveway, other alleged things like maybe damaging their door of their home, frightening his wife who was there. That's just out of bounds. And news organizations, I think, probably should have given more attention to this story than they did. It was covered, but I mean, you suggest a double standard or media bias when you don't condemn that as much as you condemn things that Trumpists do.
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. I mean, that this is definitely stepping over the bounds, especially in light of the shootings that happened at the newspaper
in Annapolis.
Over the summer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, when we don't cover these stories and give them the attention that they really do need to have, it sort of emboldens people to say, oh, well, you know, this is something that we can do. This is a tactic that we can now employ to go after the opposition.
And that's mob mentality.
Oh, absolutely.
There was another angle to the media angle of this story I found really interesting, and that's that shortly after this event happened, Fox News's Twitter account and the accounts of many of their employees
went dark,
right? And a lot of people were speculating or making fun of why that was. But it appears what happened is that it was basically a boycott on the basis of Fox News against Twitter when they complained to Facebook when people were posting the home address of Tucker Carlson. Facebook took it down. Twitter has not taken down all those posts yet, even though they said that they were going to look into it. And so I don't really think I blame Fox News for not sending more business Twitter's way while they're posting the home address of one of their people who could be in harm's way because of that.
Yeah, my fear is that, you know, you're going to have the other side begin to do these same things, you know, say against Anderson Cooper or against other journalists that they, especially at CNN, who they feel are not supporting what they necessarily champion or believe in.
Okay, well, so last week, in our post-midterm election discussion, we touched on that really uncomfortable Saturday Night Live sketch, the one where Pete Davidson made fun of political candidates based on their appearance. We talked about how far over the line he went, commenting on the eye patch. Now Texas Congressman, one of the congressman-elects from Texas wears following the loss of his right eye in an IED attack. Well, that man, Dan Crenshaw, he got the last laugh. Take a listen to this from this week's SNL.
No, but I mean this from the bottom of my heart. It was a poor choice of words. The man is a war hero, and he deserves all the respect in the world. And if any good came of this, maybe it was that for one day, the left and the right finally came together to agree on something. That I'm a...
You think?
Lieutenant Commander Dan Crenshaw, everyone, thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for making a Republican look good.
You gotta stop saying that, man. He's been saying it all day.
So I heard Dan Crenshaw tell the folks on the Today Show that he was really surprised when he got that call, actually personally from Lorne Michaels, to come on the show and to accept the apology that was forthcoming. But he saw this as a means to really spread a message for the need of greater civility between us, regardless of political stances or affiliations.
Yeah, I thought it was the right thing to do, first of all. They did it in a funny way, second of all. And I wonder to what extent the apology was heartfelt on the part of Davidson because, as Crenshaw pointed out, it isn't just for military veterans, you know, that we owe respect. It was for the folks at 9/11, including his father, who was a firefighter, Davidson's, who died racing to the Twin Towers.
And if you watch the full segment, which is on our links blog, you can see how visibly uncomfortable Davidson got as he was saying that and sharing the importance of the term never forget and to extend that to one another.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was good on the part of Saturday Night Live and NBC to pull this together, and I hope that we're moving slowly, at least the way it seems, slowly to some sort of civility, you know, within the political arena that we have now. I'm trying not to be skeptical. Because I think we've tried the civility angle before, and then all of a sudden it just sort of blows up. But at least in this respect or in this incident, they were able to come to some common ground.
I think he was sincere when he says, you know,
which he
he meaning Dan Crenshaw, okay. when he says, you know, talking about military veterans, mm-hmm. it's okay for you to say thank you for your service, but folks in the military have kind of gotten used to seeing that as just like a throwaway line.
Right.
And so he's saying, say never forget, so that you're with us, you're a part of what we're all about. Mm-hmm. Well, if you want to be serious about carrying this beyond this one instance, let's apply that thinking to some other issues. I'd say, for example, mass shootings.
Right.
You know, instead of just always saying our thoughts and prayers are with you, maybe let's say never forget or never again, or let's do something about this.
Right, right.
Okay, so at the same time Davidson and the Saturday Night Live crew were apologizing, there were some other folks out there making some apologies too, including the editors of the Houston Chronicle, who had just completed a review of hundreds of stories and ended up retracting 8 of them after discovering a former reporter at that newspaper had fabricated sources. This is something we end up talking about. It seems like every couple years we had Jason Blair, we had Stephen Glass, now we have Mike Ward. Breaking that social contract we have with our readers and with our audiences, that the stories we're telling are about real people who exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got an email on this. I'm a
former employee
of the Houston Chronicle. And so and I still have some friends who are there. And I when I got a copy of it and I just started reading, I just could not believe what I was reading. And I can't even fathom what the excuses would be for this. And they all come out. It's like, well, I'm on deadline, or I couldn't get in touch with this source, so I felt like I need to have something. So I sort of pulled this together from a range of people that I talked to.
It's a composite.
There's just no excuse for this. There's no excuse, and it's not necessary in order to be able to tell the stories. And so I just have nothing to say other than the fact that this guy is gone, he should be gone, and the Houston Chronicle was very good at basically explaining and exposing this is what happened and we're sorry that we allowed it to happen.
Yeah, I would say a little bit more about that, because once the executive editor of the Chronicle became aware of this, she did a little bit more sometimes than some papers might have done. She brought in an outside investigative reporter to go through and check all the sources over a range of stories. And they came up with almost half, I think 44% of the sources in these stories couldn't be found. Now, as the investigative reporter said, that doesn't mean you can never prove that they don't exist. But I mean, they used databases of voter registration and property ownership and court filings and phone directories and fishing and hunting license directories.
And Facebook, they called LinkedIn, people. They use them all. Yeah.
They called up people and say, "Hey, somebody supposedly visited your bakery a lot of times. Have you ever seen this person?" No, I don't know who that is. A lot of investigation went into documenting what happened, and then the paper quickly they pulled 8 stories and retracted them, and they made corrections in a bunch of others. So from that standpoint, kudos to them. On the other hand, and I'm not blaming or singling out the Chronicle for this, but this shows you how easy it is for a trusted employee to get away with this, because newspapers, let alone broadcast outlets, have never really had fact checkers the way that magazines do for big stories. But at least they had a group of editors, a lot more editors than they have today, who'd be looking over copy and might raise some questions. But because of the financial difficulties that our industry has been in for a while now, fewer and fewer editors are employed. And so you can't even catch basic spelling mistakes, let alone catching this kind of fakery.
Right. And because of that, they're able to get away with it.
Okay, so this next one, it falls somewhere between super cool and OMG, no thank you.
Hello, everyone. I'm an English artificial intelligence anchor. This is my very first day in Xinhua's agency. My voice and appearance are modeled on Zhang Zhao, a real anchor with Xinhua. The development of the media industry calls for continuous innovation and deep integration with the international advanced technologies. I will work tirelessly to keep you informed as texts will be typed into my system, uninterrupted. I look forward to bringing you the brand new news experiences.
Okay, so a couple of times there I thought that video was ending and it wasn't. If you were watching it, what you saw there was a really realistic looking rendering of a man who is designed off of an actual television news anchor in China at the Xinhua News Agency. The audio sounds slightly stilted, but not all that much unlike what you might hear on an English language TV station in China. They're doing that by simply typing the scripts into a computer and it kind of going to text-to-voice recognition in kind of the opposite way. It's kind of cool, but scary. It's all get out at the same time.
There's a lot of things about this that are interesting. First of all, it says something about how far China, through its government, you know, investments in artificial intelligence, is beginning to pull away in some ways from the rest of the world. This is a leap in the technology that was just being shown by researchers in this country a year ago, where they showed Barack Obama speaking and they put words in his mouth to say, well, I was wrong when I said there wasn't a red America and a blue America. There was just the United States of America. That you could pick that out. That was easy to see the fakery. This is a lot harder to do.
Yeah, it is a lot harder to do. I mean, the you're right about the language. I mean, this is what you would likely see in English language. It's going to be interesting to see, for me, how that plays out. Say if they were doing it in Chinese, how would it look if he was doing it in Chinese? If someone from there could pick out, oh, wait a minute, this isn't quite right, and I'm uncomfortable with this. That's where I think it's going to be interesting when you start to see this in the native language.
I want to answer your is it creepy question, though, Amy, because there's a really interesting theory that or hypothesis that researchers have been studying for a while called the Uncanny Valley. And basically it says, we like robots when we can tell they're robots, like our iRobot vacuum cleaner. We even like them when they kind of look like humans. They're kind of cool. Our kids like them. But once they get really close, but not quite, you know, just like human beings, we start to get creeped out by it. Yeah. And I wonder at what point this is going to happen. Does this creep you out? Because it looks pretty darn realistic.
It looks realistic, and I'll be honest, it does creep me out. First time I saw it, I was like, ooh, I'm not sure about this one, you know.
Okay, so before we go, something quick that I want to make sure to ask you guys about. Let's take a listen to this.
What would you like people to be left with from your career?
He wrote some good stories. I don't think about that much. You know, when I'm gone, I really don't care. It doesn't do you any good when you're gone.
That was Marvel Comics creator Stan Lee talking to the New York Times in 2015. Wanted to ask you guys, if only because you've introduced me to a couple of the Marvel movies, your kind of thoughts or remembrances.
Gonna miss him. I mean, it was you always, when you go to see a Marvel movie, you always wait.
State of the End?
You always waited to see.
I only knew to do that because
he's going to pop up. Right? But you always wonder when, that's the other thing, when is Stan Lee going to pop up in the movie? Because he always pops up in the movie. That I'm going to miss. But I'm also going to miss the fact that, you know, now, you know, he was able to create these characters with flaws. And that's unusual when we start talking about heroes, because heroes aren't supposed to have any flaws. But all of his heroes had flaws. And I think that's what helped his heroes connect with, you know, the average people who really enjoy reading the comics and the movies.
Well, that music means we are pretty much out of time for this week. I'd like to thank you for spending the last half hour with us. You can read more about each of the topics we talked about on our links blog under the programs tab at kbia.org. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @viewsonkbia. And these are all great ways to watch and listen to our program again. Leave us comments or questions, see previews of what we'll be talking about next time, and more. Our thanks to RJI's Travis McMillan for directing today's show and to Aaron Hay for handling the audio. Tim Pilcher composed our original theme music and Jared Ridgway is our social media producer. I'm Amy Simons. We will see you in 2 weeks when we're back with you for another edition of Views of the News.